You're listening to Upstream, the Software Supply Chain Security Podcast. Brought to you by Encor.
Hi there and welcome. I'm Kim Wines, host of Upstream, a podcast for those curious about the security of the software supply chain. In each episode, we talk with experts, practitioners, and thought leaders about concrete ideas and approaches to improve software supply chain security. This podcast is for everyone, both inside and outside the world of security. On this show, we highlight ways we can work together to protect the software that we all depend on. It's March 2022, and boy, did this one come in like a lion, Josh Bressers.
Indeed.
The Russian invasion of Ukraine is dominating headlines around the globe. And back here in the United States, CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, issued a Shields Up alert warning IT departments everywhere to monitor for suspicious activity that could disrupt their business or government operations.
Yeah, absolutely. This one I find kind of intriguing because if you look at all of the advice that CISA is handing out, nothing is earth-shattering by any means. This is basically things that almost every organization should be doing or wants to be doing at some point. And so I think the importance of this is kind of less about the actual advice and more about this is an opportunity for visibility to be raised. Everyone is hyper aware of their cybersecurity now. And so this is a marvelous opportunity for everyone to obviously raise their awareness inside their organization, raise their own awareness, and then also to start doing something about it. There's so many projects we all have kind of on the back burner that it's time to pull them to the front.
Yeah, it's kind of like somebody's really screaming, pay attention now.
Well, we've been right screaming now, that for decades.
Just you, Josh, just you. That's screaming fair. Into That's the fair. Wind.
Exactly.
Well, threats don't wait while you consider getting your software supply chain security up to speed. And all of this highlights the need for software vendors to disclose a software bill of materials of their products. Our guest on the show today is someone who knows a great deal about just that. Neil Levine, the VP of product at Encor, spends a lot of time talking to organizations about how they can improve their software supply chain security. Welcome to Upstream, Neil.
Thank you, Kim. Great to be here with you and Josh.
Well, Neil, we know that securing the software supply chain is becoming top of mind for organizations across all industries. Our recent 2022 software supply chain security survey done by Encor says that 76% of respondents plan to increase their use of SBOMs in 2022. And Encor recently announced a major release of an SBOM-powered software supply chain management solution. What does SBOM-powered mean, and why is that important?
So I think, as you've covered in previous podcasts, SBOMs have really come to the fore, you know, certainly from the executive order, which came out the Biden administration last summer. And people are trying to understand, you know, why do I need them and what do I do with them? Encor have been using them for a long time. We've been using SBOMs to sort of power our product ever since the beginning. And they've now sort of changed from being an implementation detail to really being something that's a first-class citizen in terms of what security professionals need to interact with. So for us, you know, SBOM powered means you get the total transparency and visibility around all the content in your software factory, everything that's going through the source code, through the build, out to deployment. So you can monitor it, see what's there, respond to it, find out what entered, you know, the pipeline, who introduced it, when did they introduce it. So it's just giving you situational awareness. That's the first layer. Just get that situational awareness, and then you can take responses and actions as a follow-up.
So it's not really just a once and done thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, SBOMs in the previous generation, maybe their first generation of use, were absolutely that. It was like, let's do it once, get the information, check the box, we did it. So if someone audits or asks, we can show that we did it. And then now, it's a foundation for doing a cybersecurity in your organization. I think it's a real sort of change in terms of people appreciating the power of what they can do. And the executive order sort of really opened that up for most organizations and have allowed them to really investigate this with a bit more seriousness than they have in the past.
So can we kind of start with the what you can do at this part, Neil? I feel like everyone's talking about SBOMs all the time now, but then often I'll hear, well, what do I actually do at these things? And this is where I think some of the answers for many people start to fall apart. But I have a suspicion you have a phenomenal answer for us.
Your confidence is not misplaced, Josh. Yeah. So, So the first thing that, you know, you need to do is generate the SBOMs from, again, as many stages as possible. As we just said, it's not a one-shot thing. Get it from every place. You essentially, you're persisting that data, and, you know, we call it SBOM management. Just get it into one place. And then, you know, at its broadest and its most general, you're doing data mining. You're asking questions of the data. Am I running this? When did I add this? Who added this? Do I need this? These are, you know, simple questions you can ask about all the contents of the software in your organization. And the Log4j incident back in December gave people the most practical experience of trying to answer those questions. And without SBOMs, it was really, really difficult. You know, who has brought this in? Who do I need to talk to get it out? That could be a software vendor or an internal application developer. So that's like the most obvious thing. I think if you look at things like SolarWinds, which, I mean, now seems old. It's like, you know, it was a year, over a year ago. But that was a great question of like, when did this come in? When did a piece of software arrive, down to the time and the date of when did this piece arrive and how did it get in there? Again, SBOMs can start to answer questions like that. And in our new product, you know, we refer to that as SBOM drift. How do these things change over time and place? And just seeing that can give you a lot of insight into suspicious activity. More practically, there's, even if you're not thinking of this from a security perspective, just getting better at doing cloud native. You know, you can actually spot, are my containers immutable, right? That's the, often the very first thing that teams are trying to sort out right now is like, these containers should not change, but they do. And we go back and work with the developers to find out why they are not adhering to cloud native best practices.
So you mentioned the example of SolarWinds. So as I understand it, what happened there is somebody got in somewhere to the development process. I don't know if it was the build system or exactly, but somewhere in the development process and tool chain, and they inserted a file that had a reasonable sounding name, but wasn't supposed to be there. And then that showed up in a build that obviously got shipped out to customers. So I think what you're saying is with SBOM drift, you would identify that rogue file, let's say, and that could then alert somebody to, hey, pay attention to this. This is new. Is this what you expected, or is this something unexpected?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think there's a concept of, you know, what your intention is as you're creating your application, what the intention should be of what's going to end up in this application, and what the actual facts on the ground are when the thing gets deployed. Now, a determined state actor is always going to be finding ways to get under the radar as best you can. So we said you've got to be careful about not saying generate an SBOM and you can capture everything. It's an arms race. It's a, you know, game of cat and mouse with particularly determined actors. But there's a large class of malicious activity and, if we're frank, just incompetence around, you know, things which are being badly set up, where things are getting brought in that they shouldn't do, whether it's test and development files or debug packages or, you know, just the general sort of, you know, state that comes out of an application shouldn't appear on a container. You should get it out. So both the suspicious stuff and the more questionable practices can be, you know, you can find those when you're checking these SBOMs diligently. Now, again, we're at the beginning of this journey. We have to be very careful not to oversell this. But the first step is to get the SBOMs and capture them. We can't start to do this more sophisticated analysis unless you're generating the data in the first place.
Well, and I think there is another important aspect of this we haven't really even ever talked about in this space is if we take a page from the playbook of incident response and security, this data gives us value in real time of what's happening right now. But there's also the forensic aspect where if something does happen, you can say, okay, I need to look back in time and I need to understand what just happened. And this is, I think, another piece of SBOM management that hasn't really been talked about it, but is going to be incredibly powerful.
Yeah, that's right. So we internally talk about SBOMs over time and place. That is, do they change over the place in the SDLC, which is the source code, and then there's your builds, where you're staging it in a registry, then you're deploying it, and then the runtime. So these are different times. You want to take a snapshot at every single time. So you can look for drift over the course of the evolution of an application. Exactly that. So when you're doing forensics, you can say, when did this thing appear? When did this piece of content, you know, enter the system? And then we talk about it in time, even if you're just looking within builds, and this was specifically the SolarWinds issue. It was just, I think, you know, you're doing with builds over and over again. they should change a little bit over time. That's natural. That's why you're getting new builds, maybe new versions or just variation of code. But maybe there shouldn't be substantive changes. You know, a Python application shouldn't suddenly have Java applications, or a Java application shouldn't suddenly have Node applications. So again, checking for this variation over time and places, again, gives you huge forensic insight.
Looking for the anomalies, I would say. You're listening to Upstream, the Software Supply Chain Security Podcast. We're speaking with Neil Levine, VP of Product at Ancor. There's a lot of talk about topics like signing and attestation to verify secure software components. What's your viewpoint on this? Is this something people are doing today, or is it something they should be doing?
There's no doubt that signing is a really critical part of the supply chain security movement, if we can call it that. And I think it was even on your previous podcast, you know, you spoke to people at Microsoft who are really invested in this. And we see the SigStore project, which we're involved in too. But we're at the very beginning of this journey right now. I think signing is a tough problem, like anything to do with public key cryptography and PKI in general. It's a tough nut to crack. SigStore really focused heavily on the ease of use to get developers to start generating the content. But the reality is the content's not there yet. So as an enterprise organization, there's not a huge amount of checking you can do. So if you're being tasked by your board or your CISO to go and implement this kind of stuff, you're not going to get a huge amount of bang for your buck right now. I think it's up for the software ecosystem and the vendors to produce a lot of this content before enterprises can start acting on it. So really useful, but we're at the very beginning of a long journey around trying to make this content very prevalent and actionable.
It seems like something the cool kids are doing right now, right? The open source community and ecosystem that are really pushing the leading edge. Josh is laughing because I'm calling open source developers cool kids.
We are the cool kids. We've always been cool. No, I'm chuckling.
I thought so.
I'm chuckling because attestation has been a topic for decades at this point, and it's really hard to do. And now there's instances where it works, like when you use your web browser, you have a certificate, and like Let's Encrypt has made that accessible to the world. I am extremely optimistic that SigStore can do this, but they are standing in front of a 200-foot wall and they have to climb it, and the wall is slippery. And so there is an enormous amount of work to do, but like I secretly pray it works because we desperately need it.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess this whole concept, like, let's maybe just explain what this is. What does it mean to do signing and attestation on, say, an SBOM?
So I think sometimes attestation is confused with trust in kind of the wrong way. What happens is, let's say I generate an SBOM and I sign it with, there's a tool in SigStore called CoSign. And in fact, you can do this today with a tool Ancor has called Sift, where I can generate an SBOM, I can sign the SBOM. And now what that signature says is it doesn't say that like the software is trusted. It doesn't say the container is trusted. All that does is it says Josh is the person who generated this SBOM. That is literally all it means. There's no other aspect of trust in the content outside of the fact that it came from me. I could build a container filled with viruses, and then I could generate an SBOM and sign it. And that's just fine, right? All it proves is I did it.
Well, does that mean you become the throat to choke if something goes wrong?
isn't that already my job? Like, I mean, so that's part of it, right? Is you want to sign things, for example, when you're an organization. This happens with like software updates coming from, let's pick on Microsoft. So we just talked to them. Microsoft creates software updates. They distribute the software updates to their customers, and then the signature is used to verify that these updates did come from Microsoft, right?
It doesn't mean, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you want to do. It doesn't mean that the update is bug-free. It doesn't mean the update doesn't have security issues. It just means Microsoft is where this came from. And in the context of SBOMs, this means if I generate an SBOM and I give it to Neil, and then let's say Neil changes it and he gives it to someone else can say, wait a minute, this doesn't check out. This is not what Josh signed. And then maybe it was a mistake. Maybe Neil's up to shenanigans. It's hard to say.
It's like the FDA ingredients label that's been signed off on. So you can maybe believe, well, I guess it's a little bit different because it's not. All it says is the ingredients label came from a particular person.
That's
but there's
right.
Nobody signing off that it's actually correct.
That's right.
Yeah, and part of the other problem is when you look at the complexity of these software stacks right now, you're going to get just half or maybe a third of an ingredient label because, you know, most modern software stacks consist of, as we know, lots of dependencies and things coming in from multiple vendors. And this comes back to the ecosystem issue, which is this system really only works when perhaps you've got all the content signed, all the attestations there through the whole chain. If you're missing a large chunk of it, which you are right now, yes, there are some big vendors like Microsoft and people who are, you know, early participants in SigStore, but most of the content won't have attestations, it won't have signatures. And so you're only getting a very, very thin sliver of additional information. And so we're back to the alert fatigue issue. Great, if I analyze this application, I'm going to get a whole bunch of warnings because there's not signatures on half the dependencies. That's no good to anybody at that point.
That's right. And I also want to stress the point that an SBOM without a signature doesn't mean that's a worthless SBOM. I think sometimes in security, we end up in this space of if you're not doing it all perfect, it's not worth doing at all. And that's completely untrue. I think distributing unsigned SBOMs is step one. If we don't do that step, we don't get to go to the step where we sign them. And so it's hugely important we don't obsess over attestation and ignore everything else.
Well, and if you think about open source, so we're starting to see some open source projects try to build SBOMs as part of their process, whether signed or not. But if it's an open source project, you could also take that open source and you could generate your own SBOM, and then you could compare it to the one that the project gave you. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly check whether there's been a tampering with the content that was available in the public repository and ultimately what you build. And this comes back to that drift concept. It's exactly where you can start to see this evolution over time. But I think even, you know, from the contents is definitely the most practical place to start. And that's why we are focused on SBOMs. But, you know, a lot of these open source projects, they're not going to be doing signing and attestation anytime soon because there's so many of them. Yeah. Some of the bigger projects certainly will, the Kubernetes and the Linuxes of the world maybe, but there are so many other basic security fundamentals that these open source projects are not even following. And the OpenSSF is particularly, you know, attuned to this with their, I think it's the Alpha and Omega project, trying to see, look, what's just general easy security these projects should be following. I think signing attestation is going to be probably down the bottom of the list compared to just some basic repository health. And are they using multi-factor authentication? And, you know, these kind of basic hygiene things are some big hoops that the open source community's got to get through first.
So you're talking about kind of where to start and like don't start at the most advanced step to begin with. So if you're a CISO and you're at a large enterprise and you're trying to better secure your software supply chain, and there's all these new technologies, there's emerging compliance requirements, and there's kind of evolving best practices. So that could seem a little bit daunting. What are a few practical ways that people could get started? What are the first few steps they should take?
Yeah, so this is, you know, really gets to the heart of what we see with our customers, which is they know they've got to get better at supply chain security, but how do they do that in ways which are practical and don't require massive changes of systems and processes, which in most organizations are very, very hard. So again, this comes back to why we say SBOMs are the easiest way to start. All your existing systems can be very easily instrumented to generate the SBOM. That allows us as a vendor to go install that and to start giving you insight into that. So you can keep your Jenkins environment, keep your GitHub environment where it is. Doesn't need to change. We plug into that. So absolutely, SBOMs is the first step. If you've got a clean green room or it's a completely new project, yes, there are some sophisticated new build systems which will sort of do all sorts of additional things, as we said, around signing attestation, but they're just not practical for most organizations to put in place. So generating SBOMs is the first one. The second one, which they're already, you know, will be doing in some way, is capture all those vulnerability reports. They're still the most important thing, right? CVEs are still, unfortunately, despite all their sort of, you know, the problems we have with them, it's still the first step of good quality cyber hygiene. So managing those, getting them centralized, getting a good application level view is also really important for an organization. I think what we're starting to see now is perhaps the next step around that is open source insights is really starting to come into this. Just coming back to this, what's the basic health or nutrition maybe of an open source project? Should you be using it? Trying to give that insight back to the application developers who are selecting the open source is probably the most easy thing. Again, no change to process or systems. It's just additional context and information. And I think that's the key point. Just giving additional information or context to existing environments is the best place for an enterprise to start.
I agree. And you touched on this a little bit at the beginning of your explanation, Neil, but I want to focus in on it. By making SBOM the foundation of a lot of this effort, SBOMs are a non-disruptive step when you first start doing them. And I think that's so vitally important. In the world of security, we are notorious for showing up and telling people to do it our way or else, and then they don't, there's nowhere else. And they're like, well, that was a lot easier than listening to them. And I feel like this is an opportunity to get it right.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a tough time to be a buyer in the enterprise market. If you're looking at all of the new vendors and the existing vendors, just the total set of technology that's available is really, really daunting. And a lot of it is, you know, can be very disruptive. And I think that's the most important thing. You want no disruption and simple experience. It's got to be about ease of use for the developer who's interacting with the data. Those are the two most fundamental things. Whatever technology you're being sold doesn't address those things, the cost may outweigh the gains.
So start with the baby steps, generate an SBOM, save your SBOM, use it to identify vulnerabilities, start to look at open source health, and then everything can grow from there. But those are the first steps we're going to focus on.
That's right. And once you've got that, then you've got the foundation to then bring in all this signing and attestation information once it's available, once yes. it's sufficient to actually go and, you know, start to act on it. So again, this is all about a foundation for this multi-year journey we're going to go on now.
Neil Levine, thank you for joining us on Upstream. It's great to be here with you and Josh. And thanks to everyone listening. You've come to the right place for great discussions of the big issues impacting the security of the software supply chain. Subscribe and never miss an episode. Upstream is available everywhere you get your podcast. If you learned something new, be sure to share this episode with friends and colleagues. Thanks for joining us on Upstream, brought to you by nCorp.